Over the years, and even now, I'll be honest, even now, I am under, I wouldn't call it pressure, although depending it could be if you looked at it that way, but I'm under a lot. There are beaucoup requests for me to go on TV, to go back to TV. And I'm flattered by it, and I'm always receptive. I don't listen to what people say. But I have no burning desire to go back to TV. And there are many reasons for it. But the primary reason, well, it's hard to pick a primary reason. I mean, A, the primary reason, I don't want to do it. But then after that is the why, which would be just as equal. And I was thinking about it the other day. I had to do a speech. I had to do a last minute, I had a replacement speech. General Defense Secretary Mattis was going to speak to the Marine Corps Law Enforcement Foundation. And he ended up having to cancel because of the action that was being contemplated at the time and that eventually happened in Syria. So they asked if I would stand in. And I said, sure, I'd be happy to. And I said, how long do you want? I said, 15 minutes max. I said, 15 minutes? I don't even get started in 15 minutes. And immediately I started feeling a little bit of pressure. The reason I feel pressure is because I cannot prepare a speech. I cannot sit down and write one. My brain doesn't work. I have to ad-lib them. I have to, just like this radio show. Everything I've said today, I didn't know when I was going to say it. I didn't know what I was going to start with. And I didn't even know exactly what I was going to say. It's just happening. It is the essence of improv. You can't do this on TV. You simply cannot do what I'm doing right now on TV. It's not too many people have to know what you're going to do, and they have to know when you're going to do it. And whatever you want to do, they have to have some accompanying video. And I'm not a collaborator, and B, I can't. I've never worked this way, to sit down and actually plan something out. And I don't do speeches that way. So every speech is a nail biter for me. What if my brain's not working in these 15 minutes? What if something doesn't occur to me to talk about? What if my memory is failing? Those are the things that equal the pressure for me before I do any, because it's none of it's planned and none of it's scripted, none of it's written. And TV, just, you can't do TV that way. I mean, you can't. I suppose you could. But it wouldn't be TV. You just bring a camera in here and put this on TV. But nobody wants to watch that. I mean, radio is to be heard, not seen, is a long-held belief of mine. But this is leading somewhere. Nielsen came out the other day with some shocking news. One of the reasons that I also say I don't want to go do a television show is the audience here is much larger than on cable. And when I tell people that, well, yeah, but it's a different audience on TV. And with Pictures Rush, it's going to have much more impact. I understand people thinking that. But that's, if you have a good host that's able to paint pictures, create theater of the mind, just as impactful, just as influential, and maybe even more so, because television is spent doing other things, too. You're watching. There's other things going on in the room. A lot of TV viewing is what I call passive. And a lot of radio listening is passive. You're listening to music, driving around. You're talking to people while the music's on. But a good radio program with a compelling host will be active. You will not want to not pay attention. But then there's this in addition to that. Nielsen has come out with some numbers, and this is about the relative audience size. Old school AM/FM radio is the most popular media of all. Still today in the United States of America, according to Nielsen, and these are the people that rate television programs. The way they do this, AM/FM radio has 243 million listeners. Radio reaches 93% of the U.S. population. Washington Times did a story on this back on April the 18th. And there's one picture accompanying this story. And it's half of the front page. And that picture is me. Now, they're all nodding on the other side of the glass. Even in the age of sophisticated cable TV and video on demand, it's old school AM/FM radio which rules the nation's media world, according to Nielsen, which has revealed the audience numbers. With 243 million monthly listeners, radio bests the competition across the board. Each week, more Americans tune to AM/FM radio than any other platform. What's more, according to Nielsen, 93% of U.S. adults 18 and older listen to radio every week. That's more than those watching TV or using a smartphone or a TV-connected device, an iPad, a tablet, or a PC. Television reaches 88% of Americans and 229 million people. Brad Kelly, the managing director for Nielsen Audio, says technology trends are a bit like fashion trends. They come and go, oftentimes long forgotten after the craze ends. But there's one notable exception to the technology fashion trend rule in the media world, and that is broadcast radio. AM/FM radio is the blue blazer of the media universe. Who would have believed 100 years after its debut, AM/FM radio would continue to top the charts as the medium that reaches more consumers each week than any other? The analysis cited, quote, compelling audio content and expanding delivery options as a strong factor in the consistent appeal of radio. And by expanding delivery options, he's talking about things like our app and podcasts and ways that augment the content. But compelling audio content, if it's done right, it's just as influential and can be much bigger than television. I'm not trying to put TV down. Do not misunderstand. This is not a versus, an either or. But it is to suggest that, you know, a lot of people think radio, that's old fashioned. Geez, that's nothing but old people. You'd be amazed at the numbers. Millennials, nearly 80 million millennials, 18 to 34, tune in to radio. That's 95% of the millennial population. 95% of the millennial population listens to radio every week. Largest audience, of course, is boomers and then Generation X. But we hit everybody. That's my point. There's no boundaries. There's no religious boundaries. All three sexes. We have all the religions, all the different genders. Everybody is out there. And it's, you know, good radio is much more personal, much more intimate than television. I'm not putting TV down. Please do not misunderstand. I'm just reminding everybody of the true impact and power of radio. And to illustrate it further, the first two audio sound bites today, NPR, in a continuing quest to help their audience understand America, and particularly Texas, decides to divide Texas into people who listen to AM radio and people who listen to FM radio. That's coming up. Don't go away.
You think you've heard it all? Just wait. Rush on the EIB Network.
FM 102.9, AM 1310, News Talk, KZRG.
Cell Phone Medics, now with three locations, 512 South Main, downtown Joplin, inside North Park Mall next to Macy's Home Store, and 916 West South Street in Neosho.
Okay, let's go to NPR. This is WNYC Radio's their midday program, and the guy that is discussing his new book, God Save Texas, A Journey into the Soul of the Lone Star State. And the host says, you describe a key divide in the culture of people in Texas as to who listens to AM and who listens to FM, right?
You can drive all across Texas and be in two different states. If you're listening to AM, you're hearing Rush Limbaugh. Then you hear the evangelical preachers and a lot of Spanish radio. That's the AM band. And the best, most full expression of that is our Lieutenant Governor, Dan Patrick, probably the most conservative politician we've ever elected in Texas, who is really driving the train of social conservative activism right now in Texas. And he is a shock jock from Houston who has his own radio stations. And he comes from that AM culture.
All right. So this is NPR trying to help their audience understand Texas. And so he's got to get into the, this is how leftists do it. This is disguised bigotry. But I have to say something with Dan Patrick. Dan Patrick, one of his first stations was in Tomball, Texas, outside Houston. And that was our first station in the Houston market. Dan Patrick is not a shock jock. Dan Patrick has never been a shock jock. This whole term shock jock, I mean, they used to call me that until they realized that not even close. Shock jock, what do you think of a shock jock? Somebody that's rude and off color. This Dan Patrick, nowhere near shock jock, but that's how this stuff gets categorized. Anyway, brief timeout. We'll come back and continue after this.
On air, online, on Twitter, on Facebook, and on demand at NewstalkKZRG.com. Newstalk KZRG, we are social media.
Okay, welcome back. Great to have you. Rush Limbaugh, the EIB Network. Now, here is the second soundbite from public radio in New York yesterday. This is a writer named Lawrence Wright with his new book, God Save Texas, A Journey into the Soul of Lone Star State. So he's just described in Texas who listens to AM, and that means what they are and who they are politically. And he points out that the AM band in Texas is ascendant right now. Now, for those of you in Rio Linda, that means it's climbing. That means it's growing. It means it's getting higher. As in, when you descend something, you're going down. When you ascend, you're going up. And he makes that point, then shifting to FM.
The AM band is in ascendant in politics right now, but the FM is just as much a part of Texas as the AM. It's urbane, it's metropolitan, it's, you know, sophisticated, and it sounds just like radio anywhere you would go, any FM station. And that, it expresses the soul of the cities, which are blue, and which are sophisticated and very much a part of the rest of America. The cities are blue, period. The rural culture has been red for a considerable amount of time, but that's not where the growth is.
The growth is all in the cities
and the suburbs. And, you know, the political demography of the suburbs is beginning to drift away from that solid red core.
So, AM radio, people in the sticks, hayseed hicks, unsophisticated. FM radio, cities, blue, sophisticated. He said that two different times in this bite. The cities are blue, sophisticated, very much part of the rest of America. The red parts, the hayseed, the hicks out there, and this is the way the left looks at this country. And that's what this guy is doing here. But he says the AM band is ascending right now in politics, which upsets them. That takes us to Arizona. There was a special election in Arizona yesterday, and the Democrats, they had already put it in the hopper as a win. And they were going to win, and it was just the beginning, the next phase of this gigantic blue wave that's going to happen in November. Except it didn't happen. The vote count as of this morning wasn't final, but Republican Debbie Lesko is ahead of the Democrat Hiral Tipernini by a 5-point margin. Wasn't supposed to happen. So here we have a CNN story, and here's the headline. Why the win for Republicans in Arizona 8 is still good for Democrats. You see how this works? Even when the Democrats lose, they win. And it's been this way with every special election they have won this year and last. Oh, yeah, this is big for the Democrats. This is ought to have the Republicans very, very nervous. What do you mean? You guys said the Democrats were going to win this. We have been told, we have been taunted. They have told us gleefully for 12 months that no Republican will ever win another election because of Trump. The entire country was going blue. The country's fed up with Trump. The country hates Trump. Even Trump voters are embarrassed and wish they could take their vote back. And they will, first chance they get. But somehow, a Republican woman won yesterday in a special election in Arizona, which means the Republicans hold on to the seat. Arizona 8, Debbie Lesko, has now defeated this guy. I think the final margin was 6 points. That is wider than the polling has been in this race. Once again, polling got it wrong. But here's how they do this. It was much tighter than the over 20 points by which Trump won in 2016. So they're doing here what they tell us we can't do. Let me give you a comparison or an analogy. The way they're doing this is comparing a presidential turnout to a single race or very few races on the ballot, practically an entirely local election, to completely different turnouts. And yet the drive-bys here are treating them as the same. So what they want their readers to believe is that in a district that Trump won by 20 points, the Republican held onto it, but only by 6, which means Trump is really losing popularity. Republicans are really losing popularity. And this means even with this win, the Republicans know they're in deep trouble. The Democrats lost the seat. They thought they had it in their back pocket. This is like trying to compare a midterm election turnout with a presidential year turnout. They're different. Different energy, different issues, different types of demographics represented. Overall turnout is much different in an off-year election than a presidential election. Same thing here. But the media is trying to conflate the two and have them mean the same thing. And every media story about this covers it the same way. Why the win for Republicans in Arizona 8 is still good for Democrats. AP, GOP unsettled by narrow win in House race in Arizona. Yeah, it took a big money push from the GOP, tweets by Trump, and the support of the state's current and former governors, but the GOP held on to Arizona 8. See, they would have never considered endangered in another year. So it's weird. We're supposed to sit here and say it's weird that the president would support the candidate. It's weird the party would support the candidate. It's weird that the state's current and former governors would support the candidate. That's weird. It took big money push from the GOP. It took tweets by Trump. And it took the support of the state's current and former governors, but the GOP held. Isn't that what happens in every election? For the most part, Republicans came out and supported their candidate. The candidate won. Somehow this is a problem for the Republicans. They had to do this. Isn't this the way Democrats did? Didn't they think Hillary was going to win simply by doing nothing? They thought Hillary was going to win without Hillary campaigning. She didn't have to go to these blue states because it was in the bag. Meanwhile, Trump's out there working it and working it. He ends up winning the presidency. The Democrats are discombobulated and bamboozled. It's odd that the Republicans actually campaigned. It's odd the Republicans actually spent money on the seat. So the Republicans did. And by the way, I thought Trump was an albatross. I thought Trump was a drag on the ticket. Why did Trump's tweets help? If everybody hates Trump, so goes the thinking. And if so many people want Trump gone, if so many people regret their vote for Trump, how come Trump was able to help Ms. Lesko win? Now, this points to something that needs further discussion, unpacking, and analysis. Because it's not news the Democrats do this. It's not news the media is unfair and biased like this. We point out the ongoing examples. But there's a larger, what does it all mean? And not just this, but this entire resistance movement What does it all mean? What does it really mean in terms of our country's future? What does it mean that the Democrat Party you and I grew up with doesn't exist anymore? What does it mean that the Democrat Party has been taken over by the radical left, which is literally resisting everything, and they are refusing to acknowledge and tolerate and deal with the fact that they lose elections now and then? We're getting to the point where they will not accept losing. They will not tolerate others winning and are not going to go away until they can tear all that down. This is really serious stuff, if you ask me. It's more than just chronicling what they're doing and how they're doing it. It's where is all this taking us? I had a charity golf tournament yesterday. And I had a chance to speak with Gary Player for an extended period of time. He's a great, great South African, one of the greatest professional golfers ever. And he and Jack Nicklaus did a clinic for the participants at the tournament, which was at Nicklaus's club, the Bears Club up in Jupiter. Boy, is it nice. Gary Nicklaus, Jack's son, was part of the festivities. He's a great guy too. It was really a great day. And I had a lot of people that came up and wanted to chat. And one of the things I'm continually asked now is not if I am aware of some recent example of outrageous behavior by the left, but people are becoming increasingly concerned about what does it mean? This is not the usual Democrat opposition. This is when the left can get away with, like this professor at Fresno State, can get away with wishing more Bushes would die, and she's going to end up not being punished by Fresno State now. She's going to totally get away with it. People have an awareness, a sensitivity that something's amiss here, something's awry, and it isn't good. And I was talking to people about the way I explain this to people is the analogy that I've used about America during the World War, World War II, and America today. We had divisions in World War II. We had disagreements. We had competing ideologies. We had competing political parties. But back then, losers lost, accommodated the winners, tried to figure out what they did that went wrong with the voters and tried to correct and become winners the next time around. There was an implicit, applied agreement that we were all in this together, and that regardless differences, there was a singular thing that bound us together, and that is we're all Americans. And that counted for something. That meant a lot. America was the greatest place on earth. America's where everybody wanted to come to be the best they could be, to make the most of their lives. It still is. But it's changing. If something happened today akin to World War II, I don't know that we have anything that binds us together as a country anymore. And this is more than just my saying that we don't have any common ground to reach across the aisle and come to agreements with people. I don't really know what binds us together with the radical left, which is taking over the Democrat Party. They're not a fringe. They've been fringe for most of the last 50 years, but they are now the mainstream of the Democrat Party. And I don't know what binds us together as Americans, because the group of people I'm talking about is not proud of being an American. They're not proud of America. They think America is the problem in the world. They don't think of America as the solution. They don't think of America as having any kind of moral authority. We're not the good guys. And it's worse than that. We are, in many of their eyes, the bad guys. And this country must be drastically cut down, drastically remade, transformed, or what have you. And it is, so you have this little story here about how the Republicans now are nervous. The Republicans are very worried, even after they won. It's why this matters instead of the fact that it's happening is where we next need to take this. Because we can sit here and document all day the examples of unfairness, of bias, of insanity, of lunacy on the left. But what does it actually mean? I'll get another analogy. 30 years ago, this program started, and they start calling us Nazis, and they start calling us racists and sexists, and they do this crazy stuff like global peace march. We laughed at them. We laughed at everything they were talking about because we said to ourselves, there's no way anybody's going to believe this. 30 years later, a lot of people have ended up believing what is genuine to us insanity. What we used to laugh at and think that nobody could ever really believe that, they do. They do. And now when they start labeling people as Nazis, they are dead serious, and you'll note that it is not categorically rejected. It is considered. People think about it. People begin to intellectually analyze the comparison. Is there a grain of truth to it, some people say. It's a slowly creeping, insidious sickness. I have to take a break here. I'm going to continue this. Mitch, your phone calls in the whole presentation as well. All that continuing after this.
Rush Limbaugh, because we know for you, only the best will do.
On the EIB Network.
FM 102.9, AM 1310, News Talk, KZRG.
The four-state severe weather station, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, around-the-clock coverage. News Talk KZRG, radio you can depend on.
Yeah, I'm going to give an example of what I'm talking about here. But first, in Arizona, let me tell you why the Democrat lost. And the margin of defeat for her 6 points, the Democrat's name is Hiral Tippernany, down by six. Person ran, she ran as a full-fledged liberal Democrat. The Democrats are feeling it. I've told you they're taking the mask off. They're overly confident. They become arrogant, and they think, because of the lies they tell themselves and the disservice their lying media does, reinforcing lies that they end up believing, she ran as an open liberal and got trounced. The Democrats that have won special elections have hidden it. In many cases, they sounded more conservative than their Republican opponents. But what I mean by this resistance business, I've sharing with you the fact that what I believe the Russia-Trump collusion movement has really been about, I mean, the big overall thing it's been about is getting rid of Trump, but how? I really believe that the effort of all of these different elements of the pursuit of Trump has been designed to drive Trump's approval numbers down to the 30s and hopefully the 20s. I think they have also wanted to drive Donald Trump insane. I think they want to make him sick. I'm talking physically, mentally ill. I think they want to do it. They don't have any evidence whatsoever to get rid of him. But note how that's not stopping them. They've got no evidence that Trump has broken any law. There is no evidence Trump colluded. That hasn't stopped them, has it? They just keep making it up. They keep applying the pressure. And when one vein bottoms out and fails, they open a new one. They do not accept being rejected. They do not accept that they are failing. They keep going on their objective of destroying Donald Trump. Now, what is this doing to the country as they do this? And that's what we need to be discussing. Because the fact that they're doing it is obvious now. And noting how they're doing it and what they're doing each day, there's no news in that anymore. What is this causing is the focal point.
He says it first, then the others jump on the bandwagon. Rush on the EIB Network.
FM 102.9, AM 1310, News Talk, KZRG.
Well, the new KZRG app. Local news, weather. Send us an open mic message. Get your app now on all devices from News Talk KZRG.
Just getting warmed up here, folks. even with half my brain tied behind my back, to be fair. It's the Rush Limbaugh program and the EIB Network, and we're going to be back here before you know it, compelling broadcast content.